Welcome to this Monday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Taylor Chalstrom has a feature report here today talking about the importance of pre-harvest considerations in almonds. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Hotter and drier weather conditions spurred by climate change could reduce California's water supply by up to 10% by the year 2040. To replace and replenish water that will be lost to thirstier soils, vegetation, and the atmosphere, Governor Gavin Newsom last week announced California's latest actions to increase water supply and adapt to more extreme weather patterns caused by climate change. The announcement follows $8 billion in state investments over the last 2 years to help store, recycle, desalt, and conserve the water it will need to keep up with the increasing pace of climate change, generating enough water in the future for more than 8.4 million households by the year 2040. The actions outlined in a strategy document published by the administration called California's Water Supply Strategy, Adapting to a Hotter, Drier Future, calls for investing in new sources of water supply, accelerating projects, and modernizing how the state manages water through new technology. This approach to California's water supply management recognizes the latest science that indicates the American West is experiencing extreme, sustained drought conditions caused by hotter, drier weather. The warming climate means that a greater share of the rain and snowfall that California receives will be absorbed by dry soils, consumed by thirsty plants, and evaporated into the air. This leaves less water to meet the state's needs. To help make up for the water supplies that California could lose over the next two decades, the strategy prioritizes actions to capture, recycle, desalt, and conserve more water. These actions include creating storage space for up to 4 million acre-feet of water, which will allow the state to capitalize on big storms when they do occur and store water for dry periods. Recycling and reusing at least 800,000 acre-feet of water per year by the year 2030, enabling better and safer use of wastewater currently discharged into the ocean. Freeing up 500,000 acre-feet of water through more efficient water use and conservation, helping to make up for water loss due to climate change. Making new water available for use by capturing storm water and desalinating ocean water and salty water and groundwater basins, diversifying supplies and making the most of high flows during storm events. These actions are identified broadly in the Newsom administration's water resilience portfolio, the state's master plan for water released in 2020, but they will be expedited given the urgency of climate-driven changes. To advance the infrastructure and policies needed to adapt, the strategy enlists the help of the legislature to streamline processes so that the projects can be planned, permitted, and built more quickly while protecting the environment. Over the last 3 years, at the urging of the governor, state leaders have earmarked more than $8 billion to modernize water infrastructure and management. The historic three-year $5.2 billion investment in California water systems enacted in 2021 to 2022 has enabled emergency drought response, improved water conservation to stretch water supplies, and enabled scores of local drought resilience projects. The 2022 to 2023 budget includes an additional $2.8 billion for drought relief to hard-hit communities, water conservation, environmental protection for fish and wildlife, and long-term drought resilience projects. Agriculture in California faces an uncertain future as drought, wildfires, and other climate extremes become more commonplace in the West. But a fledgling industry focused on growing and distilling agave plants, which are used to produce tequila and mezcal in Mexico, could be California's answer to fallowed fields and lack of water. Earlier this year, a group of growers, distillers, and retailers formed the California Agave Council to foster collaboration and offer a chance to share knowledge among members who previously had no formal network. Now the University of California, Davis, has established a Stewart and Lisa Wolf Fund for agave research to focus on outreach and research into the plants and their viability as a low-water crop in the state. The fund was created with a $100,000 seed gift from Stewart and Lisa Wolf, who are Central Valley farmers farmers and have a test plot of about 900 agave plants on 1.5 acres. They hope this gift will encourage others to also contribute. The gift is focused primarily on optimizing production in California relative to Mexico, where labor costs are lower and the farmers rely on rain rather than irrigation for water. Stuart Wolf believes California producers could grow larger plants with higher sugar content. The research also offers a chance to better understand the impact of location on growth of the plant, which can be a source of fiber and alternative sweetener, as well as the distilled spirits it can produce. Though supplies of organic blueberries from the Pacific Northwest will be declining throughout August, shipments from Peru are on the rise with promotional opportunities anticipated in September and October, according to organic fruit leaders. Stephen Paul, blueberry category manager for Homegrown Organic Farms in Porterville, articulated the challenging situation that the organic blueberry industry has been facing for the past couple of months with its Northwest crop. He said there's no other way to put it, but that they are in a challenging cycle when it comes to the climate. Weather in March and April was wet and cool, with the cold weather continuing well into June, according to Paul. Those weather conditions affected the bloom and the crop set, followed by July heat waves that impacted the quality. Noting that the summer of 2021 also brought unprecedented extreme heat to the Northwest, Paul said the weather conditions gave Homegrown's field staff an opportunity to learn how to deal with those conditions. He said that their field management team and harvest management team people have done an excellent job of knowing what to send to the fresh market and which berries need to be diverted to the freezer. He said it's been challenging, every day is different, and they are going to do what they can to satisfy the fresh market. Demand, Paul said, has outstripped supply for organic blueberries for the past couple of months, but that will soon change. He said September is a month of transition, and as Peru gets started, there is a shift in demand. While Homegrown will continue to source from the Northwest until as late as October 1st, Paul said Peru's increasing presence in the market will make a difference. It has been estimated that 90% of the country's blueberries are exported from August through December, with a peak coming in September and October. Overall, he said that the market price has been on the higher side on organic blueberries because of supply issues as well as inflationary pressures. Increased supply from Peru should result in promotional opportunities for retailers moving forward. California Giant Berry Farms has announced its People Choice winner and chef finalist of its 2022 Chef Invitational. The finalists and their recipes are Adrian Day Murchison of Calavo for Spiced Blueberry Lamb Waffle Burger with Strawberry Feta Tzatziki, Derek Siegfried, Gordon Food Service with Blackberry Lamb Kofta, Dontrell Hagler of Denny's for the California Giant Berry Meets the Sea, and Jerome Nemeth of Cisco for Berry Brisket Sando. The People's Choice winner was Robert Stegel-Smith of Performance Food Service, Giant Berry Pizza with Triple Berry Chipotle Sauce and Strawberry Pepperoni. Stegel-Smith will automatically progress to the final in-person round of the competition and take home a $500 cash prize accompanied by a matching grant to his selected nonprofit organization. Alongside the People's Choice winner, four chef finalists will attend an in-person three-day finale event on California's Central Coast, August 29th through the 31st. This event will include field tours of California Giant Berry Farms, meet and greets with growers, and a grand finale at which the top chef will be named. Each of the finalists will compete by recreating their custom recipe. Ultimately, a panel of judges will select the California Giant Chef Invitational Top Chef based upon the four specific criteria, which are appearance, usage of berries, flavor, and creativity.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Pre-harvest prep is important to achieving an efficient harvest. Equipment preparation to rodent control to orchard floor management is all part of preparing for an efficient harvest. One big thing, according to UCCE's Franz Niederholzer, is doing whatever possible to prevent barking of the tree or damaging the trunk bark while shaking. And he says this is what can cause the most damage to a tree out of anything in an orchard.
It's an avenue for Serratocystis and other bark cankers to get in, damage trees. You don't want your to lose trees in an orchard, but before their time, it's going to impact yield, things of that nature. So you want the machine well lubricated, you want your operators well trained, and you really want to make sure that the orchard is, all the trees in the orchard are at hull split, at 100% hull split before you start to shake at the very earliest. If an operator, if there are some green nuts at different spots in the orchard, and the operator, even a trained operator, shakes them a little bit longer than needed, you're going to run the risk of barking, and that's a you know, you can't go back and fix that. So having the machines well maintained and making sure the operators know to not overshake when they come up against trees that don't shake clean quickly will help contribute to a clean shake and a trouble-free history in the orchard.
Deficit irrigation is a way of priming the nuts on the tree so that the shaker doesn't have to work as hard to get nuts off the tree, resulting in barking. However, we're past the point of deficit irrigation in the regular season, but there are still irrigation-related methods to prep trees before harvest, specifically with tree moisture.
Deficit irrigation and early hull split, which we're mostly past by now, does help dry up some of that excess moisture in the orchard and make the hull split more uniform throughout the orchard and throughout the tree. But once you get past those 2 weeks, which we're about past that now, you want to maintain good moisture in the orchard. You want to get away from the moderate stress that you had at early hull split to maybe just a slight stress, but you know, full ET applications to maintain the photosynthetic capacity of the orchard. And you want to fill those nuts. You want to get them as plump as possible. So you minimize your shrivel at harvest. So making sure that the trees get the water, adequate water, now is through now till irrigation cutoff going into harvest is really important to your bottom line. You can, I think David Dahl documented, you know, up to maybe 10% reduction in kernel weights in when you have significant stress in the orchard, water stress in the orchard going into harvest.
That reduction in kernel weight is also a detriment to the grower.
The nuts don't have the weight that they could have. You still have the same number of weight of nuts. They're still the same dimensions, but they're going to be more wrinkled. There's going to be some shrivel there. And that's money that growers don't get paid for, or potential that's being left behind. So I know it's a drought year. It's very difficult for some growers to maintain. The weather's quite warm. But just for the growers that are aware that there is no benefit to deficit irrigation as you go into the final stretch before harvest, maintaining adequate, sufficient moisture in the orchard, 100% ET, is really important to getting the best production from the orchard.
Rodents are another tricky issue in the orchard and an important factor in ground floor management. There are also ongoing maintenance throughout the season.
The gophers in particular have potential for damaging the trees, but just the mounds themselves, pre-harvest mow down, you're generating dust. That's easy, you know, it's a mite issue. And then as the pickup machine comes through, if it's eating up gopher mounds, it's generating more dust. That's an irritant to the crew. It's a danger to the operators as their ability to see dust in on-farm and off-farm roads is a concern for visibility and machine safety. So gophers are a real issue, gopher mounds in particular, that dirt up above the orchard floor that gets picked up by the sweepers, that gets picked up by the pickup machine. Eliminating those gophers, smoothing out those mounds before you're coming through after the shake, it's really important to a smooth operation. If you're unaware of you should be keeping the cover crop down, so you can see any mound activity, any gopher activity, and take steps to eliminate those gophers. Certain cover crops are, certain clovers are very attractive to gophers, so you have to pay particular attention there. But as long as you know that it's an issue, having your crew or yourself keep an eye on where the fresh mounds are through the season should be able to keep ahead of them, or at least keep up with them.
Removing those mounds from the orchard and making sure the floor is perfectly clean come harvest is a great way in reducing dust at harvest, one of Almond Board of California's 2025 goals.
You know, a smooth orchard floor, a smooth, clean orchard floor is a big, fundamental step. removing the weeds, or, you know, some growers, most growers will come through with a trunk to trunk herbicide burn down spray and then mow those, eliminate the weeds with a flail mower. So you've got a flat, smooth surface to work off of. You don't lose any nuts in the divots, and you don't have to run your head, your pickup machine or your sweeper heads so close to the ground that you're kicking up, literally touching the orchard floor and contacting it and creating dust. You want to make sure your crew knows and you're paying attention to keep when your sweepers go around, when the pickup machine goes around, the direction of the dust is being blown is back into the orchard, not out onto roads, whether they're in the orchard, whether they're farm roads or public roads. So minimizing that dust is good for the orchard too, good for pollinizer varieties, eliminating potential for hull rot. That dust can get into splits that are for your later varieties. There's a lot of reasons to why minimizing dust is important for growers.
According to Niederholzer, making sure employees know as well how important a safe harvest is will ensure a safe and clean harvest. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Trollstrom.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In national agricultural news, the Department of Agriculture has announced a $15 million investment for the Conservation Innovation Grants Classic program. Through the program, grantees work to address water quantity, air quality, soil health, and wildlife habitat challenges, all while supporting agricultural production. This year's funding priorities are climate-smart agriculture, addressing invasive species, and conservation in urban agricultural systems. USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby says they are eager to help the nation's farmers and ranchers address these challenges and opportunities, and science and innovation will help get them there. For the fiscal 2022 award process, at least 10% of the total funds available are set aside for proposals that entirely benefit historically underserved producers. Applications are being accepted now through October 11th. Private entities whose primary business is related to agriculture, non-governmental organizations with experience working with agricultural producers, and non-federal government agencies are eligible to apply. For more information, log on to grants.gov. And speaking of the Department of Agriculture, they have announced a $2.2 million award to 16 organizations to educate historically underserved producers, small-scale farmers, and others. The award from USDA's Risk Management Agency funds farm risk management and climate-smart farm practices. USDA says the funding provides the resources for organizations such as nonprofits and universities to develop training and resources for producers on risk management options. RMA Administrator Marcia Bunger says this funding and these partnerships help them to reach communities that have historically lacked access to training and resources. This $2.2 million investment for 2022 builds on a nearly $1 million investment in 2021. RMA advertised available funding in January of 2022, and more than 50 organizations applied. Successful applicants provided a comprehensive summary of work statements and budgets and proposals that demonstrated an ability to partner with other entities to deliver training. Organizations receiving funding this year include nonprofits, historically Black colleges and universities, and university extensions, among others. As lawmakers prepare to write the next farm bill, the American Farm Bureau Federation is sharing stories of its importance to agriculture. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on how the safety net included in the farm bill keeps farmers farming.
The importance of the farm bill may be well known, but for Marita Hauser, in years like this one, it's what keeps her farm in business. The Southwest Kansas farmer says the safety net within the farm bill is critically important.
For us on our farm, we've been experiencing pretty severe drought, and the farm bill has a crop insurance program with it, and it's a public-private partnership, and that allows us to be able to continue to farm when we have drought like we have this year on the farm, where we weren't really able to harvest any wheat. That helps cover some of the cost of what we put into the ground so that we're able to continue to farm.
And she says the commodity programs provide crucial research and promotion programs.
The commodity programs support the things that we're growing and the things that the people in the United States and around the world are eating, the food and the fiber and the fuel. There's research dollars that go into it. All of those things help strengthen us on the farm and help secure our ability to make a living on the farm and the food security that we need in the United States.
She encourages all farmers to get involved in the 2023 Farm Bill legislative process.
I would encourage everyone to get active with their local Farm Bureau and attend any listening meetings that they have, get involved and let their voice be heard about what we need to see in this 2023 Farm Bill.
Michael Clements, Washington.
The push continues to convince enough senators that passage of the Farm Workforce Modernization Act will provide certainty for both farm owners and workers while battling inflation. After passing for the second time in the House, U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse feels like senators are coming around.
I think I can best say at this point, we have been making a lot of progress with the Senate. A lot of important work has been happening between senators and House members and the staff of offices in both the Senate and the House. A lot of ideas are being exchanged and paper being exchanged. So a lot of conversations happening, and I'm very encouraged by that.
House says today's labor challenges are not lost on the Senate.
I think I've said before that there is a growing number of senators that understand the critical nature of this problem and why agriculture needs a legal workforce.
Newhouse says the need is becoming more and more clear.
Labor is short to begin with. Legal labor is very short, so we need reforms in the H-2A program. So I'm very encouraged by what I see as progress.
The bill would establish a program for workers to earn legal status, more flexibility for employers, critical protections for workers, and an e-verify system for all ag employment. Newhouse's goal is to see this turns into law before the end of this term.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
A Salinas-based company has taken to the skies to apply predatory mites and other beneficial insects to fields and orchards infested with crop-damaging pests. Parabug, as the company is called, uses a patented rotating dispenser that's gentle on the biological control agents. Chandler Bennett, company president and founder, said the tube-like structure can be mounted under any beefy drone.
That's the uniqueness of Parabug, is the applicator itself. Went through a variety of different designs, or I used to call them prototypes, testing them for efficacy and mortality on the insects, whatnot. Eventually settled on the current design that a lot of people have come to recognize, which is it's essentially a tube on its side with like a spiral of holes. And those holes are what the insects go through as the tube rotates. And that's really the key to the whole mechanism, is the rotation for this dispensing of these biocontrols. Predatory mites, they like to go towards light and away from gravity, essentially. They like to go to the top of things. So that's what it was primarily designed for, was predatory mites. So that rotation keeps them thoroughly mixed and uniformly mixed and applied through the mechanism. If it was stationary, they would all be collecting at the top of the container and whatnot. So that's the primary reason for the rotation. The other is it's probably the most, at least what I've come to find, the most gentle on the biocontrols. We're not applying any direct mechanical force on them, which would, you know, obviously crush them or hurt them in some fashion. So that's the Parabug unit.
Beneficial mites typically come mixed with vermiculite or wood shavings for easier handling. Bennett said they first started out applying mites, but since then, they've applied a broad range of biocontrol agents using their drone-based system.
Majority of biocontrols that are commercially reared come mixed in some sort of carrier. With predatory mites, it's usually either vermiculite or wood shavings or like a rice bran. And that's what they're commonly mixed in. There's other carriers such as rice hulls, buckwheat hulls. I'm sure I'm missing a few, but we can apply with our mechanism, we can apply all those carriers. And we've successfully applied just about every commercially reared biocontrol. Like I said, it was primarily designed for predatory mites, but since then we've The predatory mites, parasitoids are, you know, like wasps, even large beetles like Cryptolemus. If you've if you got a biocontrol that's commercially reared, it's a good possibility that we've applied it.
In the early years, Bennett said they used a small off-the-shelf drone to carry the dispenser. More recently, they've moved to larger drones that can carry the heavier payload. They've settled on the DJI T10, which is actually an ag spray drone. He said this unit also provides more flexibility to parabug applicators.
When we first started, it was an off-the-shelf DJI Phantom, a really small drone. Eventually got into different custom airframes, but now we are sticking to off-the-shelf airframes. We were originally, for the longest time, on the DJI M600, which is an off-the-shelf product, but fortunately it's at its end of life. So we integrated onto the latest and greatest, the DJI T10, which is also a off-the-shelf drone, more specifically a sprayer drone. So it's the DJI T10 is designed for spraying applications in agriculture. Really well built, waterproof. Everything's waterproof. You can do RTK, GPS, quick charging. Just overall built for ag. I like to say it's a flying tractor. But anyways, it was not as easy to integrate onto as the DJI M600. We're now completely agnostic of the platform. We have our own remote control and whatnot. So we could go onto other platforms really easily, but we decided on the DJI T10 because the operators we work with, we wanted them to have the ability to do more than just parabug. You know, if they buy an expensive asset, they'd like to be able to do more than just parabug. So what's great about the T10 is, or our system on the T10, you can put it on or off within 10 minutes. So you could be doing a parabug job beginning of the day, and then end of the day, you could take everything off and go straight into spraying if you wanted to.
Bennett said applying predatory mites by air has a number of pluses. The first is mites tend to hang out in the plant canopy. By dispersing the beneficial mites in the treetops, you're putting them closer to their prey. He said going by air also is significantly more efficient and cost-effective than applying predatory mites using a hand crew.
Applying via drone is beneficial for a variety of reasons. Doing it from the top or from the air, especially beneficial with predatory mites. You want to get them up in the top of the canopy where, you know, the pest mite is. So that's one plus. Plus, doing it from the air, we can just do it so much more quicker. I'd probably say we're about, depending on how you do it, like with a truck or a quad, you may be able to beat us, but in comparison to a hand crew, being able to do it by air, significant savings. We're able to do things, you know, 70 to 80% faster than like a hand crew or any other application method.
Scheduling an application is relatively easy and can be done online using the parabug.solutions portal. But Bennett said he realized that could be cumbersome for some growers, so scheduling also can be done via email or telephone.
We've been trying to make it a uniform way of scheduling these jobs. Everyone's kind of got their own unique way of wanting to schedule, but ideally we've created a tool where you can go online, map out your field, give the basic details of the application, like what pests you're going after, what biocontrol you'd like to use, what rate, and that all gets submitted to us via that online portal, and then you get a copy of it, and then we get back to you with when we can get out there and do the job. But we also recognize that it can be a little bit bulky for some guys, so what we can end up doing is working directly with like the crop consultant or the grower, just get the ranch map from them and schedule the application that way via regular email or, you know, phone call.
Parabug has a network of drone applicators throughout the nation that have been specially trained in how to handle and apply the beneficials. In California, the company employs a team of trained applicators.
So that's also unique about Parabug. We can service just about anywhere in the United States. And how we do that is we basically work with independent operators or drone companies. So we lease the equipment to them. They go through training on how to handle the biocontrols, how to apply, those sort of things. And so that way we have like a uniform, I guess you could say, standard across the entire United States. So whether a parabug operator is doing it, you know, locally in California, or Viewpoint, who's a drone service provider, is doing it in Florida, no matter what, you're going to be getting the same service. So that's kind of the business model of Parabug, is we lease the equipment to these independent operators. They go, like I said, through training, and they can go perform the service. But we also do have in-house pilots right now only in California who also do the work.
California has a number of licenses and registrations required for those who apply pest control materials from the air. Bennett said Parabug and its operators have made sure they have all of the proper credentials to operate not only in the state, but elsewhere. In addition, both he and his wife Jacqueline, who's also involved with Parabug, are licensed pest control advisors in California.
So in California, there's quite a few more regulations than other places in the United States. In California, you have to have a journeyman license or essentially a crop duster license. So you have to have that. Then you have to have a Part 107 from the FAA, which is a drone, commercial drone certification. And then you also have to have some general liability insurance as well in order to perform this work in California. I can't forget the pest control business license and, you know, the other things that come with having a pest control business in California.
For more information about Parabug, visit https://www.parabug.solutions. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.